Hello and welcome to ADHD Mums. Today's episode is called My Heart Can't Handle ADHD Meds Anymore and It's Breaking Me. This is my personal story. The only reason I'm doing this episode is I had so many emails and so many DMs that I put a poll up onto Instagram and said, who would like me to do an episode on lipidemia? And I was really not expecting so many people to actually reply yes. I had 98% of people, thousands of people that said they wanted me to do a mini reset on lipidemia and what was going on with my health at the moment. And I think it might be because there are so many people that listen to this podcast who are suffering with the same chronic health conditions or are suffering with chronic health conditions and just are trying to find answers constantly. So while I'm telling you something that's happened to me, it's not for sympathy or for attention. It's because if we don't talk about these conditions, what we usually do is whisper or we joke. But maybe there's something in me sharing about my own pain that will help you recognize your own and help you seek help. There are so many thousands of women, especially neurodivergent women, who are living with undiagnosed, misunderstood chronic conditions. This is an example of something way bigger, and it's an example of how women's health really needs to be looked more deeply into this country and also supported more financially in this country. So if I go back for a moment, in 2021, I was diagnosed with ADHD. My children went through the diagnosis pathway as well, and I also discovered I was autistic, I was hypermobile, and also I had lipidemia. Now, my mum had lipidemia and never knew it, and she felt incredibly shamed for her legs, and she was always dieting, and she could never figure it out. And we used to go in and try and buy her shorts in summer, and I really respect the way that we could laugh and cry together as mother and daughter because she just couldn't figure out why her legs looked the way they did. In my teenage years, I was concerned my legs would look the same. And throughout my mid-teens and my 30s, I realized that, yes, I had lipidemia as well. I also have a family history of a lot of people dying suddenly without cause. There's been autopsies conducted with no cause of death and a lot of people dying between 40 to 50 or 40 to 55. Both of my parents died before they were 55, as did their parents and aunties, cousins, and other people in the family. So in about 2023, I went and decided I wanted to do Ehlers-Danlos testing. Now, there's so many different ways to do Ehlers-Danlos testing, and it's such a complex area. So I'm going to put some notes into the show notes, but this isn't about Ehlers-Danlos testing, which is a whole nother thing. But I do have an episode on that, which I'll also put into the show notes. But I went and got the Ehlers-Danlos testing genetically, and what it found was that it was inconclusive. And I ended up getting to speak to a geneticist, which was amazing, who talked to me. And he said to me, I actually think you should do a heart panel. So I went and did a heart panel with a swab of my mouth, didn't think anything of it. 8 weeks later, I got a call the geneticist wanted to speak to me. And I actually have a very rare heart gene called RYR2. Apparently, I'm only one in 36 people in the world that have this gene. Lucky me. Now, I'm not a medical professional, and I don't pretend to be a medical professional, but basically, this particular heart gene can turn into something that can be quite life-threatening, but it could also sit there and not turn into something life-threatening. So I ended up going to see a cardiologist. I saw a genetic cardiologist. I did a stress test. I did a Holter monitor, and I did all of the things asymptomatic, and I got cleared and told to come back when I was 40. Throughout this, I also had my lipidemia operation in February, and then I had the second one in July. When I went into the operation into July, you can listen and read more about my lipidemia operation, which I'll put in the show notes and in the blog. But I went into the operation quite confident. I was put to sleep. And when I was woken up quite abruptly by a lot of shaking onto my body by a nurse and a doctor who looked quite stressed, who said that I was in SVT. Now, if you don't know what SVT is, and I'll put the information into the show notes, it's basically an abnormal heart rhythm. And it starts in the upper chambers of the heart and it suddenly speeds up. My heart rate was 70, which is fairly normal because I'm laying down resting. And it jumped up to 180 beats per minute in a second and stayed there for 15 minutes. Now, no one could believe that I had no symptoms at this point. I didn't feel lightheaded. I wasn't short of breath. I didn't feel anything. And then basically I went back to sleep. And then when I woke up in recovery, they had put me in a fishbowl for observation, which is basically a room with glass so everyone can see you in case anything happens to you. So one thing that did happen, and I'm actually still trying to put it together, and I'm unsure what this was. because when I was woken up, they told me that my heart was racing and kept asking me repeatedly, do you have heart problems? Are you okay? How are you feeling? Have you seen a cardiologist? Is there anything underlying? Now, maybe it was the way that they were speaking to me and that I could see that they were stressed on their face. Maybe it was that. And then when I closed my eyes, I went into a dream state, or there was some kind of experience that I had. And I don't know which one this was, but I know that throughout the 15 minutes, when my heart was racing at 180 beats per minute, I was laying still. I do remember my vision blurring. I grew up Catholic. My parents were Catholic. We always went to church. However, I'm not a practicing Christian. I don't think about religion and spirituality a lot. So this is not coming from a faith-pushing background. I really don't have many or any political views or spiritual beliefs that are very strong. But I do know that when I was lying there and that my heart was pounding, or whether I felt like it was pounding because they told me it should be pounding, I did wonder whether my heart would stop, whether I was going to die. And I did have that moment that people talk about in books, but also it's not explained. And I don't even know if I was dreaming or whether this was real, but I did feel pink light. I did feel warmth and I did feel love. And I did have an experience that's very difficult to understand, and it actually gets me emotional thinking about. When I think about what I was thinking about in those moments, I wasn't thinking about the podcast. I wasn't thinking about my career that I'm very proud of, or the books that I want to release or I have released. I thought about my husband and I questioned whether I'd taken him for granted. I thought about my kids and I wondered about some of the choices that I'd made. And I wondered about the amount of push and stress and the internal drive that I have. And it did shift my mindset a little bit, or a lot. I felt quite emotional. I feel emotional thinking about it. I didn't feel regret, but it was like grief because I hadn't questioned any of it. I just worked harder, masked better, pushed my kids, this pushing masculine energy. And I just questioned the way that my husband would say to me, can we have lunch this week? And I didn't prioritize him. I definitely had some very clear moments of reflection. And the only thing I thought about was my husband and my children, knowing, of course, that I don't have a close extended family. So whilst I wouldn't say it was a near-death experience, I don't know what it was. I'm still struggling to come to depths with it now, but it did shift my perspective a lot. And it's difficult to talk about without getting upset because I was alone in that hospital, completely alone, without any family at all. And I felt so alone and vulnerable and out of control, if I'm honest. It really broke me. And I felt incredibly emotional when I was there. I got transferred to the rehab unit after that because I was in Sydney and I wasn't able to go home. You have to get discharged to a carer. Obviously, with my heart, I wasn't able to get an Uber to an Airbnb, which was my plan. And then I eventually came home. But when I was up in the rehab ward, I found that my hemoglobin was actually incredibly low, which means I have a very low iron and I'm anemic. And if I'm honest, I hadn't been taking care of myself properly. I hadn't been drinking enough water. I hadn't been having lunch. I survive on muesli bars. And sometimes with my level of anxiety, if I'm honest, I don't eat. I've had a battle with anorexia in the past. And I do wonder if it's anorexia or whether it was AFID, because when I feel out of control and stressed, I just don't eat. I don't get hungry and I get physically stressed. I can't put food in. And so when they did a lot of my blood count, I found that I was really deficient in a lot of areas. I have supplements at home. I don't take them. And having the experience or the dream and the shift in priorities, I wondered why I didn't take the supplements, eat lunch, go out with my husband and live differently in those moments. I reflected now on the times when I would be during the day at work and I would have a pounding heart. It would feel like a panic attack, anxiety. So for me, I never thought too much about it. So this is what I've learned about my heart, is that I have sinus tachycardia, which means my heart rate is 130, 140, sometimes just sitting still. I don't have SVTs all the time, but I've already been in ER with an SVT since I've been home. It's probably related to a connective tissue issue, I would say, or an electrical issue in my heart. I've pushed as hard as I can for a cardiology review, but I'm on the wait list and it might be another 2 months before I get one. I haven't been told medically because I haven't been able to get anybody to see me, but I would imagine stimulants like dexamphetamine, which I've laughed holds up this entire podcast, is probably going to exacerbate the problem. So I've had to go off medication, which has just been completely devastating. I feel at this point I'm trying to make light of it a little bit and joke about it. But to be honest, I'm feeling a lot of grief about not being able to take dexamphetamine. And look, maybe when I see the cardiologist, they may be able to put me back on it a little bit, because it's just so difficult to function at the moment. It's so difficult to just send an email, just make a phone call. And because I've had a life that's based on me taking dexamphetamine, I am now thrust back into that life without it, still having to keep up with the same amount of things. It's devastating, because I do wonder what it's going to be for me moving forward, how much my heart is going to affect me in terms of stress, not being able to take medication, my life expectancy, to be honest. So hats off to the ADHDers that do this without medication. I definitely feel slower, foggier, less motivated, or anxious and disorientated. And the laser focus that I used to rely on really has gone. Tasks feel bigger, conversations feel harder, and parenting feels heavier. I'm still me, but it's like walking through mud, trying to do the simple things. I think we need to acknowledge what it costs to function without the tool that helped, to acknowledge what it's like to have medication, have access, and then have it taken, whether that's a chronic illness, whether that's accessibility, whether it's cost, whether it's the medication shortage. But there is a huge cost to having a tool that works, fighting for it, and then not being able to use it anymore. However, even if the dishes aren't done, even if I've been crying more than usual, even if I've snapped at one of my kids, we are still valid, we are still here, and we are still trying. So here's your permission to stop striving, to grieve what's been lost, and to know without zero doubt that you are not broken and we can do this. Big love to anybody who's not able to take ADHD medication or not able to get diagnosed. There is absolutely things that we can still do. And it's not about being less than, but it's about acknowledging what it costs. So if you're grieving the loss of what helped you function, whether it's the ADHD medication shortage, whether it's chronic health, whether it's accessibility, if you're watching the meds get taken off the table, that's not weakness, that's survival. We can do this. Please share in the Facebook group, share this episode. Thank you so much for listening. And maybe the lesson is that we don't have to push through, and that maybe we're allowed to say, this is too much, I need help, and I'm not going to grind myself into the ground like that again. Maybe this is about living differently and taking that pressure off for just a moment to see how that looks for you. I hope you've enjoyed this. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time.